with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming your courage to find that which has always been in you. And yes, it does take courage because many times we want to hang on to the past or we simply just can't imagine something better in our lives, let alone discovering who we really are, because this involves of, you know, us letting go of things, you know, whether it be those attitudes or perceptions that no longer serve us or keep us wounded, and then taking on something better, more life-giving, more authentic to who we truly are. So reclaiming that which has always been in you. And very excited to be with you here today, every Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time, and any other time in between. And each and every week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And so I place all of these within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine universe. And this is why I place this integration specifically in relationships, because we are social beings. We are social creatures. We are relational beings. And when you think about it, it doesn't make sense at first, but we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in relationships. And here's the part that doesn't quite make sense, but it's probably one of the greatest ironies that are out there. And yet, you know, even though we're wounded in relationships, we can also discover our greatest healing and strength and peace and forgiveness and love through healthier relationships. And certainly, as I've been talking for the longest time now, that these relationships just might be within our very own families or our coworkers and our friends. Because whenever we begin to reclaim our authentic selves, we begin to transform. We also transform others by our presence and just how we are with them. How do we talk to one another, you know, through grace and understanding? But first, forgiveness and kindness and compassion begins with how we treat ourselves, because this is something that I run into time and time again in counseling others. It's like they say that, you know, I can be forgiving of somebody else, and if they do me wrong, I can forgive them, but I just can't forgive myself. Okay, and so that opens up a deeper discussion of what does that mean then to be able to be kind to ourselves, and then we can be more kind to others, or simply to be more compassionate with ourselves, then perhaps we can be more compassionate with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens our hearts to be able to see and to live in gratitude with others. Because transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. Well, hey, I am Dr. James Hauck, and as I said, very happy to be here today with you. And if you'd like more information about me, or perhaps you even want to leave me your comments about today's show, just invite you to visit the website, www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all one word. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And these broadcasts are podcasts, in case you want to go back and listen again, or if you can go back in the archives and listen to previous shows. And I just wanted to, before we get into the show today, I just wanted to thank you all for your support over the past year, and would just like to say that you now have an opportunity to continue your support by becoming a monthly subscriber. Now, a subscription is not required to listen to the shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So if you go on the website, you know, the Reclaiming Authenticity website, you'll see a place there where you can click on for subscription information. There's a link there. It'll take you right to it. And you get to read a little bit more about that. And there's also a dollar amount that you can click on if you feel led, or if you'd like to put in your own dollar amount. Just any amount you feel comfortable giving is just greatly, greatly appreciated. So again, just filled with gratitude from the bottom of my heart, just the many ways in which people have been supporting me. Well, speaking of hearts, how is your heart today? I hope it is well, and I hope overall you are well. And I hope that if you're even struggling today, even the slightest bit, that you'll be able to find some rest and comfort and peace that you need. Okay. Well, this is actually a part two from last week, this show. Last week, I looked at the alchemy of authenticity. And, you know, the subheading is transforming dimensions of our spirituality. But this week, I want to focus on transforming dimensions of trauma, because still this is an area which many people feel trapped. Many people just find themselves being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And they become overwhelmed, you know, just their inner resources or even outer resources just become exhausted and overwhelmed. And, you know, that's kind of the textbook definition of trauma, along with other, clinical expressions of just how that plays out in terms of our peace or our depressive symptoms or anxiety, or how that affects our moods or sleeping, eating, intrusive thoughts, whatever it might be, a startle response, something that pulls us back into a very traumatic experience that we had. Well, I also want to talk about the higher dimensions in terms of just the alchemy of authenticity and just how do we go about using those dimensions to transform trauma in our lives. Okay, so let's kind of ease into it here, shall we? Well, in school, whenever that was for you, how far back you want to go, in school we may have learned in chemistry class that physical alchemy was and is concerned with altering and transforming chemical properties within solid matter, such as the classic example, changing lead into gold. But spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing your vast spiritual self, which is being hindered within you by the unrefined parts of yourself. And these could be anything from our fears or our limited personal beliefs or our self-loathing or whatever it is that we are struggling with. And spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted. It's more fluid, and it's ongoing. And it's a continuation of the purification within our hearts, much like in the same way if you've ever seen a smith turn up the heat beneath the hopper, which contains a raw mineral or a metal, in order to break it down and to use it for something else. And so as the heat is being increased, impurities come to the top, what they'd often call dross, comes to the surface only just to be skimmed off and just, you know, put away somewhere else, which that process just makes the metal purer than what it was before. Actually, it makes it stronger as well. And then this process is repeated over and over again and again, until the metal reaches its finest purity and greatest strength that it can. And we too are going through, I believe, a process of a spiritual alchemy of authenticity. You know, that is a call and an urging to move into higher dimensions of our authentic selves. You know, because how often does it feel like in today's world that the heat is being turned up through, let's say, past and current events that are out there, what's taking place throughout different parts of the world? And therefore, when going through this process of spiritual awakening, you know, sooner or later, we are confronted with the fact that there seems to be so much more to ourselves than the reality we are living in and what we have grown accustomed to. Okay, and we get those glimpses, and it does require courage for us to reach out and to explore that instead of just saying, well, I don't have time to do this, or I don't know if I could follow through with this because I just might, you know, be led into having to change my life, and I'm not quite ready for that. But still, we may find ourselves struggling with, you know, how we are triggered by certain events in the world. And yet, at the same time, we have a more intentional progression, shall we say, you know, in our spirituality, and finding that courage to let go of, like, say, non-life-giving perceptions and experiences in order to embrace more of our higher dimension, more of our authentic selves, as well as a desire to live exclusively from that heart space of pure light and unconditional love. I was reading various things this past week, and I came across a familiar passage in Scripture. It's a story about the Apostle Paul. He describes a time when he was caught up to the third heaven. And this, his writing is actually found in the book of 2 Corinthians in the Bible. And he describes the whole story, you know, he's talking about himself, but he describes it in the third person. And he says, I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Now, whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know, but God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things that no one is permitted to tell. And as I was reminded of that passage and thinking about these higher dimensions of our spiritual awareness, I immediately thought about, you know, that's just like us human beings. We always want to quantify something, you know, such as describing it as a third heaven, which we might just then assume, well, if it's a third heaven, then it's probably better than a second heaven. And we quantify things because, well, that's our language, and that's how we then can measure something, or we weigh it, or we compare its progress or regression, and determine whether or not it places us with something better or worse than where we were before or what we had before. And there's often descriptions of, say, a third, fourth, fifth dimensions, even higher dimensions, which are not places per se, but rather they are dimensional and more attuned perceptual awareness of the vastness of God and the universe. And as we become more aware of this increase in our dimensional awareness, our vastness, our vibration changes to adapt and sustain, and actually has to be able to change enough in order to sustain more and more vibrational awareness. And this takes time to not only accept this, but to allow it and integrate this vibrational awareness. And, you know, we're humans, okay? We think that, well, I can handle it all at once, no problem. You know, but truth be told is that we have to be able to grow into it, as it were. There's another story in the Bible in Exodus 33, where Moses was up on the mountain, and he had been communicating with God for some time. And Moses asked God if he could see God's face. Well, God replied to him that no one can see God's face and live. So what he did, he accommodated Moses, and he hid Moses behind, or in, I should say, a cleft in a rock. And he allowed Moses to see just the tail end of the glory of God as God was passing by. And even that was too much for Moses. So imagine what it would be like for us if we, first of all, we cannot demand to see all of the glory of God. You know, it would just be something we could not handle. But with every dimension, every vibrational awareness, we become more and more attuned to it, to be able to handle it. We just can't handle it all at once, but it takes time for that integration to set in. Well, each dimension of reality does have a different set of vibrations that govern what generally can and cannot be done by any individual soul or one who has, let's say, an awakened consciousness that's in a particular dimension. And say, you know, just toss out an example here. For lack of a better description, let's say a less attuned vibrational dimension is said to be more diverse. And you know, where we, if we find ourselves in that dimension, you know, we'll have stronger feelings of or beliefs in kind of this separation or a disconnection from other things in our lives. Maybe a disconnection from, like, say, structures or shapes or forms, such as objects or even one another. We just feel so disconnected. But in other words, we may believe that as human beings, we're separate from other living beings like animals and vegetation and even minerals. We just don't get the fact yet that we are interconnected to them and we are interdependent on these things. Or let's even think about it this way. The Native American flute that you hear at the beginning and middle and end of my show actually comes from different flutes that I play during my own meditation. I have worked these flutes into, you know, instead of just playing the flute, I actually pray the flute. And all Native American flutes have their own key and ranges. And some are attuned to a 440 hertz, which in and of themselves have a beautiful sound. But there's one flute I play more often that has been attuned to 432 hertz, which 432 hertz is mathematically consistent with the universe. Or in other words, it's an earth tone. It has more of connection to, you know, the tones that are going on in the earth. And music, excuse me, and music that is tuned to 432 hertz is softer and brighter than 440 hertz. And it's also said to provide greater clarity and is easier on the ears. And ironically, there have been scientific studies that demonstrate whenever we listen to music that has been tuned to 432 hertz, it has other health benefits, such as it lowers blood pressure, it relieves stress, and allows people to experience deeper, more peaceful sleep, even if they have been listened to 440 hertz. And if you listen carefully, if you ever get a chance to compare or just, you know, I'll have to play a flute for you here, that, you know, you'll be able to hear just a subtle difference between listening to music attuned to 440 hertz and then listening to music attuned to 432 hertz. And certainly 432 hertz is healthier for us to listen to, but we ourselves have to become attuned to listen to this vibrational level. And the same is true when we apply this understanding to our spiritual awareness. I mean, we live in a three-dimensional world, okay? And science has pointed this out to us, you know, long time, okay? We can measure things in, you know, the width or the height or the depth. We get that, okay? Three-dimensional. Or let's say, in, you know, we think of three-dimensional as living at a 440 hertz vibration, as it were. And a three-dimensional world is governed by time and space and structures and form. Again, we can measure those things. And we also live in a chronological order of, say, linear time that consists of past, present, future. And we experience all of these things through our five senses of sight, sound, touch, smell, taste. And yet at the same time, at this vibration, we often find ourselves, you know, just how easy it is for us to be pulled in the direction of opposites, such as, do we consider ourselves to be loved or not loved? Do we think that we have value and worth because of what we have done or what we have not done, or what we have or do not have, or how we connect or how we disconnect, or are we all good or are we all bad? That's just a very basic, just pulled into a polarity of it's either this or it's that. And you can, you know, almost hear the disconnect of you know, whenever we use words like that, and just this is how we might perceive our world at these lower vibrational awarenesses. And, we perceive things in people also this way, you know, as being good or bad or right or wrong or, you know, all of this and all of not all of that. But it's all in this duality. And these polarities are actually a state of being or a limited perception. Okay, and perhaps we often want to connect with God on this lower level of awareness. And you know what? That's actually fine. Because one thing that we're reminded of over and over again is that God is more than happy to meet us where we are. It's like if we're at this lower level vibration, you know, God's not going to say, well, I'm going to wait till you get your act together and you kind of raise your vibration, then I'll reach out to you. It doesn't work that way. You know, God is certainly able to reach us wherever we are. However, this is not God's ultimate desire for us to remain at these lower vibrational levels of awareness. Because there's so much more for us to realize about God and the universe and even ourselves. You know, because to put it another way, we ain't seen nothing yet. You know, there's so much more that we just haven't even clued into. But the first step in raising our awareness, that is becoming attuned to, let's say, the vibration of 432 hertz, is the understanding that we're not the body, you know, but rather we are souls within the body. I mean, God knew us before we were born and knows everything about us, and yet we have yet to realize, you know, these things in ourselves and to see ourselves as souls living in this world. And this is certainly more in line with who we truly are. And you know, what kind of shift does that take us through in coming to the realization that, yes, I, you know, the body is the body, but I am a soul. That's where my identity lies. And this might be especially difficult to grasp at first, because no matter how high our spiritual awareness or spiritual attunement becomes, we still have to contend with this physical form. You know, a form that gets hungry, a form that has to contend with illnesses and diseases, a physical form that feels pain, and a physical form that certainly needs to bathe. And in fact, there's still work to be done. I mean, food has to be grown, or food has to be harvested, then distributed, prepared, and then enjoyed. Medicines are needed to be developed continuously, and people need to be educated and trained in not only knowing how the body works, but also how then do we treat the body when it doesn't work? I mean, we certainly need to take care of the body as that vessel that houses our soul. But still, what makes the difference between identifying as merely a physical form rather than a soul is that we no longer choose to live in fear of everyday life, let alone the dying process, because we are eternal. I mean, those fears lie in the physical form. But when we realize we're souls, and we are eternal, first and foremost, fear doesn't really stand a chance. You know, we'll still experience pain, but we don't have to live in that fear. And the fear of death, that's taken away too. Because if we're eternal, it's more of a transition for us. And we can walk each day and interact with others, knowing that there's more to this life than what our senses can identify. Because in reality, what we see, hear, touch, taste, and smell is very beautiful, very good. But these things are also temporary. They're always changing. But everything else that we do not see and hear and touch and taste and smell, those things are eternal. And it's true. Our bodies also go through a change as our heightened spiritual awareness increases. And we need to honor that, because we will go through shifts in our own awareness that may cause us to become more tired at times or more sensitive towards light and sound and temperature. We may go through states of hunger, or we may go through states of, I just don't have an appetite. Or we might even think we're going crazy. Like, how do we make sense of all of this? But all of these experiences in the body just means that we're shifting into a higher consciousness, and the body has to adjust in order to handle, you know, just a greater vibration. So again, think it in terms of the flute. Something tuned to 440 hertz is good, but to reach a higher vibrational awareness or a higher consciousness, 432 hertz requires that adjustment to be able to pick it up, albeit ever so subtle. Okay. Now, for me, It feels as though at times everything is just speeding up, and I often become more sensitive to noise. It's just more intense for me, or things might just be brighter. But we can also feel lighter, you know, which really has nothing to do with the bathroom scale. So we don't have to keep weighing on ourselves and like, gee, I feel lighter, so how come I'm not losing weight? Has nothing to do with that. Okay, but we just feel lighter in and of ourselves. And as we begin this process of a higher dimension relationship with God, we will be reminded of all the negative psychological, emotional, and spiritual patterns within our relationships that keep us stuck in the past. Those things also, you know, can really ramp up with intensity, which is a reminder of we still have a lot of work to do. And in a sense, it's a daily surrender, or saying yes to being led by our soul's desires that connect us with God, one another, and the universe. You know, we are encouraged to let go of those, you know, of the former in order to take on something more life-giving. And we can let go, you know, more easily because we're no longer controlled by that fear, but compelled to take on something better because of everlasting life and grace. And we no longer wish to simply find peace or find grace and find love, but rather when those shifts are occurring, we find ourselves becoming peace, becoming grace, becoming love. And talk about the vibe we give off, you know, that attunement, that awareness, and, you know, this sense of beingness generates a very positive energy field around us, or a vibrant aura, as some would call it. And other people can tell this even before we speak, just being around us, you know, they just know something's different. And I'm sure you've been around others where you just can't quite put your finger on it. Something's different about them. They feel a little lighter. They just did something is different. They just seem to be a little brighter and so forth. Okay. And like I said, others can tell this, you know, that something's going on in us even before we open our mouths. And we no longer have to worry about, you know, well, what am I going to say in any given situation? we can just relax and simply be. And we find ourselves being fully present, not just with ourselves and others, but we can also begin to experience God in the most unlikely places and through the most unlikely people, which, in all actuality, is where God has been found all along. Well, after the break, I'll tell you what, we're going to be taking a look at how we can transform our traumatic experiences in order to experience a more attuned perceptual awareness of the vastness of God and the universe. So I would really love to hear what's on your heart today about this subject. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I just wanted to thank you for your support over the past year. Thank you for tuning in and listening, calling in and so forth. And I would just like to say that you now have the opportunity to continue your support by becoming a monthly subscriber. Now, just a reminder here that you do not need a monthly subscription to listen to my talk shows, but it is greatly appreciated. So I just invite you to go on the website, and you'll see a subscription link, and you can choose any amount that you feel comfortable with. No pressure, but I'm just truly, truly grateful in just different ways or providing different ways that people can support this show. Okay. Well, also earlier in the show, I was talking about the first steps that we need to take in raising our awareness. And that is our understanding that we are not the body, but rather we are souls within the body. And yet, how many things in our lives are meant to take care of the body? You know, all we have to do is just open the medicine cabinet, or, you know, and we see pain, you know, medicine. We see deodorant, we see powder, we see shaving cream or whatever, you know, toothpaste, you know, all those things are necessary, you know, for good hygiene. And, you know, certainly we have to take care of our body. Absolutely. But we are so much more than the body. Okay. Because again, in scripture, you know, God says, look, before you were born, I knew you. And knows everything there is to know about us, but yet still loves us unconditionally and loves us eternally. But we have yet to realize these things in ourselves. Can we love ourselves, you know, with that unconditional love in which God has shown to us? Can we know everything there is to know about ourselves and still accept ourselves and love ourselves, or to see ourselves as souls living in this world? And like I said, this may be especially difficult to grasp at first, because no matter how high our spiritual awareness or attunement becomes, we're still going to have to contend with this body you know, a body that gets hungry and, you know, is susceptible to illnesses or diseases, a body that can feel pain, a body that needs to bathe, a body that just needs to be taken care of, because the body is going to be growing older. And whether or not we like to face it, there's going to be certain aspects of the body that's going to start to fall apart. And one day, the heart will stop beating and those brain waves will cease. So in the meantime, as we're raising our spiritual awareness or our spiritual attunement, we do need to take care of our bodies. And, you know, in a sense, there's still a lot of work to be done. We just can't fold our hands and, you know, our arms and just say, well, whatever, we'll just wait for the inevitable. That's not how it works, because there is still a lot of work to be done. Okay, and there's food that needs to be grown, and then it needs to be prepared and then shared and all that. And the other example I used was, you know, medicines still need to be developed, and people need to be educated, and the people need to be trained in how our bodies work, and as well as how to treat the body when it doesn't work, and so on and so forth, you know. And we have to take care of the body as that vessel that houses our soul. But we are much more than the vessel. Okay? And still, what makes the difference between simply identifying as a, you know, as a soul versus a physical form is that when we identify as a soul and we finally get that and we understand it, we embrace it, we no longer choose to live in fear of everyday life. And we no longer choose to fear the dying process, because we know that since we are souls, we are eternal. And so we can walk each day and be around others and interact others, and knowing that there is just so much more to this life than what our senses can identify, you know, because again, and these are powerful senses we have: sight, sound, touch, taste, smell. All very good, all very necessary, but these are all temporary. You know, because everything else that we are not able to see or hear or touch and taste and smell, those things are eternal. So what about people who have suffered tremendous traumatic pain and psychological and emotional, even spiritual anguish in their life? Does all this talk about living in higher dimensions with God and ourselves and others simply, you know, nothing but a pie in the sky or a Pollyannish way of hoping in a better tomorrow? Well, I don't think so. In fact, it exceeds all of our perceived expectations of who we truly are, and let alone influences the kind of life we desire. Now, let's bring it into my world here. Let's bring it into a clinical mental health context, okay? There is a theory, therapy out there. It's called self-psychology. And it was developed by Heinz Kohut, who understood our inability to overcome many issues in our lives as stemming all from an underdeveloped sense of who we are. In other words, we just don't know who we are. Okay? And not only are we not simply aware of who we are, but we're also not aware of what inner gifts and beauty and strengths and skills and talents and all that we possess. You know, everything that we brought into this world with, everything that we've come into the world with. And those external objects in our lives have been substituted for what we really desire in relationships. Okay, so when we're younger, if we're used to lugging around, say, a teddy bear, okay, because we like it because it's soft and cute and everything, as we get older, as we come into more an awareness of, well, who am I, we let the teddy bear go. And we replace that with more human relationships where we can find that love and acceptance, that peace, that intimacy, that nurturing, that courage, and so forth. Okay. Well, in previous broadcasts, I have shared how trauma has the potential to disconnect us from who we are as a soul. It's almost as if, you know, trauma places a distorted template over our perceptions. I mean, trauma says to us, well, sorry about that, but this is all there is now. This is all there is to you. This is as good as it's going to get. And when we really take an honest look at those kinds of statements, they're all lies and distortions that come from other, shall we say, wounded people or people who have yet to discover the fullness of who they are. Okay. And, you know, once we embrace ourselves as soul, we may be astonished to see the power of our soul to not only to be able to transcend trauma and transform our wounded energy, but also empower others to do the same. And still, as history, you know, has taught us and still teaching us, many have feared that resiliency and power of the soul, and therefore have tried to silence its cry, you know, through killings and murders or genocide or starvations or forced assimilations or humiliations, degradations, looking at people as savages or primitive or backward or labeling people as unworthy or unlovable and therefore disposable as those in control see fit. And I had a conversation with a person earlier this week about this very thing. You know, it's like this is something that society has never gotten right. You know, on one hand, they say, well, we can silence people who don't agree with us, or we can silence people who are kind of in the way. And we both, you know, were on the same page about this. Well, we just both kind of had a good laugh and just said, look, you can't silence the soul. It, because it's energy. And, you know, it's just a simple physics lesson that you cannot destroy energy, but you can change it. You can alter it, but you can't destroy it. And so, you know, when society says, well, we'll just snuff out this person or these groups of people, that's not going to do it. Because, you know, again, from where I sit, the dead do talk in many, many different ways. And the soul has a depth of and power to its voice that will never, ever be made to be quiet. It is that powerful. But, you know, again, people who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And so that just seems to be the old playbook that, you know, that we don't like these people or we don't appreciate you or something. And so we'll just, you know, get rid of you and you'll be forgotten about. And it's like, nope, that won't do it. If anything, and again, this comes straight out of history. If anything, this teaches us that kind of perception of, well, we'll take care of you, and so we won't have to listen to you or whatever, that has always backfired. In fact, it has often spurred on some of the greatest, you know, just rising up or the revolutions that have taken place just because an oppressed people have just said, enough, no more. Okay, and so it always backfires, and the message or the words or the souls get stronger. And then, of course, people who want to try to silence that, they try to ramp up their tactics as well. But you just simply cannot kill the soul. It is energy. Okay, well, what is often, getting back to trauma, what is often heartbreaking to me is that all of these atrocities that I mentioned, the murders, the killings, genocide, starvations, and so forth, have often been committed in the name of God. And they've been committed in the name of God by people who should see themselves as soul. In fact, even when killing is done in the name of God, the only thing that is truly advanced is this distorted view from those who will do anything to hang on to their power. Well, there is a very powerful ritual out there that I love it, I love it, I love it. And it actually comes from a tradition among indigenous tribes, which involves a powerful blessing from, say, the grandmothers when a baby is born. Now, before the newborn is returned to its mother, the grandmothers would, you know, the grandmothers of the village would, clean up the baby and, you know, take turns holding the child. And they would look deep into his or her eyes. And with a loving tone, these grandmothers would speak words of affirmation, one after another, and tell the child how much she is loved by this community, how much he or she is loved by God, and how they are gifted with many good and very precious gifts as a beautiful soul. And this grandmother's tradition, shall we call it, begins this internalization process of love and security and trust in the infant that truly reinforces the idea that indeed it takes a village to raise a child. Now, in listening to a story like this, I mean, don't sit there and think that for 1 minute that you missed out, you know, that you wish somebody had done this for you. You know, that if that would have happened, then my life would have turned out completely different. Well, ironically, even if that didn't happen when we were infants, we can still provide this affirmation for ourselves and others. It all depends on how we see ourselves and others as souls that makes this integration, this conversion possible. And this is the beauty that I find over and over again to counseling therapy, that it's not just about alleviating mental health symptoms in, you know, troubled clients, but it also involves helping people discover who they are and the gifts and the character strengths that they have. In other words, helping people remove their emotional, behavioral, even spiritual obstructions so that they may embrace their authentic selves. And in my book, Reclaiming Authenticity, I state that everyone has been given what they need when they come into this world. As I said, their power, their energy, their gifts, their talents, their resiliencies, personality, and so forth. And yet, it's often through various experiences that we are often misled to believe that in order to survive or in order to thrive, we have to first deny who we are and give away our power and settle for living by another's inauthentic definition and rules. And that is wrong. And as a result, we end up searching for our true selves in all the wrong places, instead of looking within and looking at our soul and understanding who we are. I mean, interestingly, when people finally fully embrace the fact that they are soul and are indeed precious in the eyes of God, the compassionate, nurturing side of humanity emerges in a very powerful way. And issues of, say, prejudice or sexism or egocentrism or racism or any kind of ism that you might want to come up with all go out the window, because these simply cannot dwell in the higher consciousness and awareness of the soul, because these isms are all based on externals. Even helping generations heal from traumatic issues in which they had learned or reinforced the message of, you know, well, don't trust these people, or internalized a skewed perception, which affected their attachments growing up or how they made friends or their, you know, bonding and so forth, cognitive development or even social interactions. Healing from traumatic issues has this multidimensional and multi-generational effect, because when generations of a family are able to come together and address these issues, let's say a child, a parent, a grandparent, maybe a great grandparent, They quickly realize that healing such wounds is not a matter of placing blame, but instead understanding the impact of what exactly has been handed down through the generations. And this is something that I love to do. I love to get the grandparents and the grandchild to talk to each other. Because when the grandmother or the grandfather sees the struggle that the grandchild is going through, and sometimes how the grandchild will blame himself or herself for what's going on in the family, or blaming themselves because they just, well, they're made to be the scapegoat in the family. Grandparents, they discover this faster than anybody else, and they see the pattern over and over again. And they, first of all, correct it. They remind the grandchild, this did not begin with you. This is not your fault. This is not your fight. And not only does the child start in his or her healing process, the grandparent does as well as the parents, who often find themselves just sitting in the middle of these two people and just wondering what in the world just happened. You know, well, healing took place. Intergenerational healing took place. Okay. And certainly going back through the generations then, you know, family members just might become aware of how many others have had, let's say, addiction issues, that they've struggled with things that they just simply weren't strong enough to beat, and that, how that gets handed down, you know, through one generation after another after another. And suicide is also another family dynamic that has been shown to come down through the generations. And families are certainly wise to investigate just how certain emotional, psychological, sociological factors set that stage for such perceptions and behaviors to unfold. Even if suicide attempts have not occurred in, let's say, the present generation, there might be feelings of hopelessness and despair that may have infiltrated the family's perception of, let's say, they feel powerless. So for the most part, healing is a matter of unlearning these generational lessons that have affected what family members believe about themselves, as well as perceptions that have affected their behaviors toward one another. Okay? And even if, you know, let's say one's parents or grandparents or great-grandparents are deceased or you've never met them, healing can still be achieved by understanding the dynamics of trauma that has been handed down in the family, as well as appreciating the resiliency and other character strengths that family members possess. Because emotional and psychological wounds are not the only thing that we may have inherited. Our character strengths, gifts, and skills, they are also handed down as well. Yeah, we just have to see who else in the family might have things that are similar to us. Okay? And this could be a very, very slow process. But again, as we raise our vibrational awareness, it is going to require us to let go of many things that we have perhaps been clutching to all this time. But there are certainly tools that we can do that. And if you were listening to the show last week, I had mentioned, you know, the author Ira Byock, who, you know, he wrote a book, you know, that the four things that matter the most, or saying the four things that matter the most. And I would like to, if I could, I'd get his permission, but that won't happen, to retitle the book, Finding Our True Selves Through Restoring and Being in Right Relationships. And the four things are very simple. I mean, we don't have to waste any time. And like, what's keeping us back from sharing these things with others? And so he says the four things that we should be saying every day is, forgive me for whatever. I forgive you for whatever. Thank you for whatever. And I love you because. Forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, and I love you. I mean, if you really want to change, you know, the mind and stop manifesting negativity in your life, as well as moving into higher spiritual dimensions with our relationship with God and ourselves and others, then also begin by focusing on forgiveness, gratitude, and love, and bring them into your hearts. And living in higher dimensions of our awareness means living from our hearts. And all experiences then are embraced with gratitude, as the soul knows that everything has its own purpose for our growth and expansion of our consciousness. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and I am so glad you took time to spend this hour with me. I really, really appreciate it. Leave me your thoughts on the website. There's a place to do so. And again, until we talk to each other again, may you always be at peace. And until that time, may you be safe, and may God hold us in the palm of God's hands. Take care.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.